I got this guy, he works in a burrito bar. He's never been to college, taught himself Ruby on Rails.
Wow.
You need a Ruby developer. Couldn't find any. And she's like, do you want to give him a shot? And we did. We gave him an apprenticeship, and he far surpassed the computer science grad. And light bulb went off, and I looked out my window and I said, there's people all over this town that have aptitude.
My name's Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast, celebrating women in tech around the world. So excited to have Anne-Marie here in Troy, New York. Yes, I'm in New York right now, and this is amazing. It's a thriving tech ecosystem. I can't wait to share her story. Go ahead, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Sure. Hi, great to be here. My name is Anne-Marie Lanasey. I own a software company here in Troy. We do software consulting called Green Tree Technology, and as part of that work, I've been doing that about 10 years. As part of that, I started a nonprofit also here in the capital region called Albany Can Code, which essentially brings more diverse faces into the tech sector in the Cap region.
I love Albany Can Code. I mean, okay, let's start from the beginning because both of those things are super epic. So where did you first find that you became interested in technology?
I think it was in middle school, actually probably way farther back than that. When I was like a young kid, I had a Commodore 64 and I liked making colors on screens.
Yeah.
So I think that was like the seed planted. But then in middle school, I spent a lot of time in some kind of after school club doing like a digital pelican. I just was like making, pixels on a screen
and it looked
like a pelican. I spent hours on it and loved it. And
how old were you?
I was in middle school, so probably seventh grade. So
that's
maybe
13, crazy.
12. Yeah.
And how did you access that? Was it in school that they gave you the computer?
Yeah. Yep. So that was back when I think like Photoshop was first starting, maybe even a year or two prior. So we had some kind of software where you could make stuff on a screen.
Yeah.
It was either a class or an after school. I don't remember, but it was way fun. I really enjoyed it.
And then where did you take that interest in technology into high school and college? What did that look like?
I think in high school, I certainly, I did a lot of like video manipulation. This is again before this is like a thing.
Yeah.
This is back in the like early 90s, but I was doing like video stuff with, Quark Express and different software packages back then. And then really it was in college. I went to a engineering school, wasn't sort of on the engineering track, but was more on the human-computer interaction side, and started to understand how people use computers and just got really fascinated by sort of interface design, but also like the study of like human factors in computing.
Yeah.
And I just loved my undergrad, and I just saw all kinds of, and that was really where I think the first seed for Albany Can Code started. I started to sort of see that a third of my, because I took computer science classes, a third of my classes, people would just like get it naturally. They didn't need to be in class.
Right.
Another third had to really apply themselves, and then another third, it really wasn't for them. I was in the third where you had to like apply myself.
But
it was not coming super naturally.
I
started to see that there are people that have aptitude for these kind of jobs just very naturally. That was one of the seeds that was in me from the early on to say. And it was also where I first realized that there's very few women in tech, because I was in a class of maybe 10 or 100. 10, I'd be the only woman, or 100, there'd be 10 women. So I started to notice, like, where's all the girls pretty early on. So
did you, like, this is resonating. Do you feel like you invented your life? You knew you had an interest in junior high school, and then you sought out to invent. How were you going to make this a reality?
I don't think I was that purposeful. I wish to say I was. I think I do kind of believe in the lucky stars syndrome. People say, well, luck is, whatever. I don't really always believe in it. But I believe if you're in the right place at the right time and make the right things happen, like, I think it certainly has a factor.
Yeah.
And I always just loved it. So I had the passion for it. So I just, I kind of followed the passion. I'll just, do this like screen design stuff before it had a name. And like we were studying video on the web before it was like, before YouTube was a thing, and I just had the passion for it. So I just followed my passion. So in that sense, I would say I was sort of purposeful, but never really consciously thinking, where will I be in 10 years? I never, ever looked that far out. It was more like, where will I be in 10 days kind of thing.
And what was it like? So when did you start your software consulting? consultancy company.
I started that in 2009.
And was it scary? Like, how far out of school were you? Did anything happen in between that time?
So I had a really interesting, after I did my undergrad, I went on and did a master's, and then I got a job, and that was, like, early on. And I got this great consulting job, and I didn't realize I was sort of an entrepreneur. Like, it was, I didn't even know there was a name for that kind of thing. But yeah. I had a consulting job. And then I went to work for that company, and as part of that, I started a multimedia division within that company, and kind of eventually learned, oh, well, I don't own this thing, It's awesome what I've done, but, you know, I really like to have my own stake in something.
Right.
And told my boss I'd like to go out on my own or be his partner.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a little ballsy, but he was a great mentor to me and still is. And he said, great, I'll get you started. I'll keep you on payroll for 6 months.
Yeah,
I'll
give
you health insurance. So that's when I was able to get my software business started. So
I can't believe – that's the most unique entrepreneurship – like, first of all, that you had health insurance as an entrepreneur is, like, mind-blowing.
I know. So when I was first hired by that tremendous mentor, I had no idea what I was getting into, and had I wouldn't have accepted the job. I was essentially hired for a two-week consulting project and ended up being a two-year gig, but the collapse of the World Trade Towers fell directly into Deutsche Bank's North American headquarters, and I was hired to create all these multimedia demonstratives for a $6 billion lawsuit. Showed up for my first day on the job with the North American chief of Deutsche Bank and all the attorneys they hired to recoup their $6 billion lawsuit, and was truly an incredible experience. And I was 23. Had I known what I was getting into, I would have totally thought I was underqualified, but ended up, you know, just really thriving, and we ended up winning, and it was fantastic. 2 years of 80-hour week, and it was just wonderful work. And thanks to my mentor boss that hired me for the job.
I mean, that's insane. 23 years old. What made you say yes at 23?
Well, I think I didn't know what I was getting into, and, you know, they hired me, and they're like, of course, you've got what it takes for this, and I don't even know if they knew what they were looking for, but I don't know. I just said yes, and off I went, and my boss just, you know, we ended up working together for almost 8 years, and he was tremendous, and that's why he gave me that tremendous, oh, yeah, I'll support you, and, you know, for the next 6 months. I mean, I still had to show up to work and get my work done, but I could do it on my schedule, and I was able to keep my health insurance and take a go at starting my own company.
Incredible. I'm a little bit, like, kind of taken by how much this person invested into you and, like, partnered with you and supported you in your journey. Do you guys still have a working relationship together?
I haven't seen him in a number of years, but he's still local here, and we stay in touch. He's had some health issues in the last couple of years, kind of recovering from some of that. But I mean, he was also the kind of person where I started to learn, you know, women do face a little bit of different challenges. And I started my career with working for him in New York City, and down there it was very different than in this Albany Capital Region area. If you were, at least this was my experience, if you were male, female, young, old, an alien, it didn't matter. As long as you could perform, that's sort of all that mattered. And he and I started to work together. He hired me for that consulting job, and then I went to work for him and built this little thing. And he just knew I could perform, and he was like, sure, yeah, I'll help you. He was an entrepreneur. He was just one of those people that...
So cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
And okay, so you went from that. Why switch from the city to upstate New York?
Yeah, well, we were based here, but working out of the lower Manhattan area, like living in a hotel. And that company was building forensics, which is very different than what I do now. But, we were kind of all over the country. So like when Hurricane Katrina hit, we were down in New Orleans. When the collapse of the World Trade Towers, it was down in New York City to figure out what happens when buildings have major issues.
Yeah.
And so we were based, our company was here. And then I started my software company here and just got really engaged in the local, tech community, which has been thriving. But also really starting to notice that we have a thriving Cap Region tech sector, but we also have communities within the Cap Region that are not accessing that pipeline and these high paying jobs.
Yeah.
And so I started to notice, well, we have fewer women. I don't see other, women in tech world, heads of tech companies here. You know, we need to get more women into the process. We need to get, more racial diversity, economic diversity. And I hired a guy in my software business that had a 4-year computer science degree. And then a recruiter came to me and said, I got this guy. He works in a burrito bar. He's never been to college. Taught himself Ruby on Rails.
Wow.
You need a Ruby developer. Couldn't find any. And she's like, do you want to give him a shot? And we did. We gave him an apprenticeship. And he surpassed the computer science grad. And light bulb went off. And I looked out my window and I said, there's people all over this town that have aptitude. And that was a start. And it has gone.
That was the start of Albany Can Code.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what's Albany Can Code look like? Well, first I wanted to ask, what does your company deliver?
So GreenTree.
And who are your customers?
Yeah. So software consulting. So we do computer programming, projects of all different shapes, kinds. Mobile apps, web apps, primarily highly scalable web applications is pretty much the core business that we do.
And then Albany Can Code. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So that was, like I mentioned, we have, you know, I had this sort of aha moment, light bulb went off, and I looked out my window and I said, that lady could be a software engineer. She doesn't maybe know it because they never taught it in the schools. And, you know, she probably has the aptitude or could have the aptitude. So we set out to find people. We built a little curriculum. We put up a website. We had 75 applicants out the door. We accepted 12. We've doubled every 6 months. So we went from 12 to 24. All of last year we had 60. Right now, within the first 3 months of this year, we have 50 students. And it's just kind of wild because the Cap Region employers are all really tied in and engaged and are, you know, giving internships and jobs to these folks. And on average, we're seeing, you know, sort of like a $20,000 pay jump after they go through our program. So it's kind of an exciting, really opportune, just like moment in time.
I think you went by that last part a little bit too fast. They see a $20,000 pay bump.
Yeah.
After, like,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you're really improving people's lives.
Right.
So how, what year did Albany Can Code start?
We started in the summer of 2016.
And what does it look like? What, like, if I wanted to be a part of it, what does that look like for me?
Yeah. So we have a website, albanycancode.org. We have an application on there. And, you know, we have people come and apply to be a part of the program. We ask a series of questions. I've been yet to find a test out there that can say, does someone take this test and they have the aptitude for software engineering? But we ask, like, what have you tried? Have you gone online? Why do you want to do this? So we sort of get the passion. We try to figure out why are they interested? What have they done? And that's been really fantastic. And we've had over 100 people go through the program at this point. And like I mentioned, the preliminary data is really promising. We surveyed half our first group, half of our students, and like we were getting those folks reporting back. Some folks going from unemployment to $75,000 salaries. I mean, kind of off the charts. And now we're reaching even further in communities because we started to see like traditional, you know, white males coming to us saying, oh, this is a great way to become a software engineer. And so we're working more with community-based organizations to do digital literacy.
Yeah.
Because right now people might not know how to answer our application questions. So that doesn't mean they don't have aptitude. So we're just reaching further into communities where there could be people that could really use opportunity for this high-paying sort of field.
I feel like you have a really healthy balance of leading a professionally purposeful life, being that you have like the software company and then you have is it a philanthropic organization?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do you suggest someone that wants to make their full compass life more purposeful? How do they go about doing that? I think people would feel like it's done. I met this girl in Serbia. She said, I really want to do XYZ. I'm like, well, why don't you create it? And she's like, I can't do that. I don't have enough experience to do that. Mm-hmm. Who am I? I'm not important. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What would you tell her? What advice would you give her?
Yeah. I mean, my sort of compass is like life is short. Like we think we have a ton of time and the reality is we may or may not. So it's like I'm just very driven to like do what I can each day. And so I would just say get started. Like people think it's this huge thing, but actually if you just start with like the first small task and you do small tasks. In 2000, I think it was right before starting Albany Can Code, even with Greentree, I got very purposeful in that business. I said, I really only want to work with people that are making an impact and where they see the value that we can do in their business. So make an impact. Because we're, you know, everybody wants to build software. Everybody thinks it's going to, you know, build it and they will come and you'll become the next Mark Zuckerberg.
Totally.
And, you know, had
we won't.
Right. Had a lot of experiences where I realized, there's just not a lot of things I want to be working on. I don't have a lot of time in the day and I really want to get to work, like bringing other people. I feel like I've had this amazing career and I'm almost 40 and I still feel sort of young and I feel like it's time to just get to work bringing other people. And really, I mean, in college, we were talking about, we need more diversity. Well, that's 20 years ago for me, and I don't see a lot of change. So I'm like, I do see a lot of change. I shouldn't say that, but I just feel like we have to work harder, and I just got excited to do it and still wake up every day. I actually even more so every day when you see life's changing in the way that we are. And I absolutely think, like you said, people can, they can. Like, that's how big things happen with people. People are what make big things happen.
It's funny. I was watching, I don't know if you saw this, the Little Dicky music video called Earth. Did you see that one? Everybody watch it. It's fantastic. But anyway, somebody said, yeah, but I'm only one person. Like, how can I save the planet? Like, if I put my stuff in the recycling bin, how does me make a difference? Or I eat less red meat. And then someone else said, no, it's about everybody doing a little equates to a lot.
Yeah.
And it does feel like, who am I? I'm so small. Sometimes, like, I'm just one person. But imagine if millions of people had that thought and we all took just a little bit of action.
Yeah, yeah. I 100% agree.
What is your favorite app, hardware, or website? Just one.
Ah, golly, that's a tricky one. I really like Trello these days. Yeah. I mean, I've done all different kinds of project management tools, and that's one's the easiest one for me to just pop in some quick things. I work a lot on sticky notes, so it has a good sense. I love Evernote too. I've been using that for years and go back in and out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely the mobile phones have changed the way we work. So I could not live without working off my little screen there.
And how about your favorite book?
Absolutely, without a doubt. It's called The Path Appears by Cheryl Wu Dunn and Nicholas Kristof. And it's about essentially what we talked about. Like, the path appears if you start to walk down it, and really, how do we make a difference?
Best advice you've ever received?
Ooh, I'm a little stumped. I would say the best advice I'd ever received is to, I don't know, you got me. I can't answer that one. I wish I could.
You can marinate on it a little bit.
Okay.
One last question I have is, what's a huge obstacle that you've successfully overcome, and how did you overcome it?
I think I'm still in the process of overcoming, and some days are better than others, but I would say, like, my own mind. I think it holds me back. Like, I think that how much of my own trash talk about, oh, well, I'm just a woman, or I'm just one person, or there's all these barriers in my way. It's just all in my head. They're really not. Like, if I just start to walk down the path, it's a lot less barriers than I think.
It's funny because we see other people, at least when I see other people, it feels like everybody else has life handled and on lock. I'm like, why am I flailing when everyone else knows the magical secret treasure map? And I think it seems like we all think that everybody has it figured out and we don't. It's fascinating. I still completely doubt myself on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And then how can people connect with you further? Where can they find out more about everything that you do?
Sure. Yep. So albanycancode.org is our website. Albany Can Code on Twitter and Instagram. And I'm AmLanesey on Twitter as well. Instagram, you can follow me. That's all fun photos of my family. And Green Tree Technology, our website. It's greentree.com.
Cool. And we'll include all of that in the show notes. Thanks to our amazing teammate, Carl. Thank you so much for being on the Women in Tech podcast. Is there anything else you wanted to share that we haven't covered yet?
Golly, I'm just the last piece of advice. I feel like I have to give it to you. I would say the piece of advice that anyone has ever given me is to wear a smile.
I like that. Give me five. I like wearing a smile. I haven't heard that one yet. Thank you so much for hanging out with the Women in Tech podcast. If you want to connect and collaborate with more amazing women in tech around the world, remember you could go to the Women in Tech Facebook group at womenintechvip.com. That's womenintechvip.com. Or go to the Women at Women in Tech Show on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. I will see you guys, talk to you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye.
This is Anne-Marie Lanasey, president of Green Tree Technology and founder and CEO of Albany Can Code, both in Troy, New York. Green Tree Technology is a boutique software development firm based in Troy, New York, and Albany Can Code is building pathways into the Capital Region tech ecosystem, and you are listening to Women in Tech.
Women in Tech is an independently funded project funded by you, the community. So the way that you could support us is by going to patreon.com/womenintech and making a small contribution. Every little bit counts. That's Patreon, patreon.com/womenintech. Thank you so much for believing in our vision.